Hello and welcome to the Learning Mate podcast, where we speak to subject matter experts in the fields of education, education technology, and workforce development to learn more about advances and issues in the industry. From cradle to career, I'm your host, Keith Chandler, and in this episode, artificial intelligence. It is a buzzword. It is rapidly transforming all aspects of life, and education is no exception, especially early childhood education. It offers promising opportunities to enhance teaching and create engaging learning experiences through personalized learning, with, of course, the challenges of data privacy and the digital divide. But to discuss how one organization has created a unique platform to harness the power of AI to improve learning outcomes while also addressing these challenges, I would like to welcome Christy Pang, co-founder of Lervana Labs. Christy, welcome to the Learning Mate podcast.
Thank you, Keith. Thank you for that generous introduction. I'm very excited to be here.
You're very welcome. I want to get into a little bit of your bio real quick. As I mentioned, you are the co-founder and the co-CEO of Lervana Labs, which is a leading AI company focused on developing safe, effective learning tools powered by the latest advancement in large and specific language models out of Silicon Valley. Since founding the company in 2022, your work has been deeply rooted and guided by cognitive development research, efficacy, and inclusion in AI adoption in partnership with UN advisors, Harvard, and Stanford researchers. So quite an impressive lineup there. Christy, you were named Woman of Impact by Kapoor Capital and also a leading woman in AI education by Arizona State University and Global Silicon Valleys, having delivered AI-powered learning to over 20,000 children globally in less than 1 year of launch. In partnership with schools across three continents, you care very deeply about how to empower teachers and parents to raise thoughtful, creative, and critical thinkers with all of these tools that you are working with. So obviously, you have built a remarkable career at the forefront of education technology. And we had the opportunity to speak recently, and you shared how your mother played a significant role in where you are today. So I'd like to first open up by exploring, and if you could share your journey into education technology and the impetus behind co-founding Lervana Labs.
Well, thank you for that, again, overly glorious introduction of how I got to where I am. I think if I would boast about one thing that is unique about me as a founder in the AI space, it is that I am a mother of three. I have a 4, a 6, and an 8-year-old, both girls and boy. And in the middle of the pandemic, so 2019, 2020, I had them all propped up in front of laptops for Zoom school to death every single day. Meanwhile, I was Zoom working, and so was my husband.
The universal parent struggle, right?
Yes, and there's a lot. I mean, I started this journey with maybe 20 other parents concerned about this and also feeling completely out of their depth. Right? So, you know, kudos to all of the early childhood educators, teachers, tutors, nannies, grandparents, whoever it is, who is every single day personally coaching our children together with their parents. We realized that now that we're stuck in four walls and it's just the two of us with these three kids, we are completely outnumbered. We are at the whim and fancy of YouTube, right? I'd be the first one to admit that my kids were spending about 2 hours in front of a screen every single day, outside of Zoom school. And I have no way of controlling what these three kids are watching. I try my best, you know, being a very conscientious parent that I have. I built separate playlists for each child that I myself curated. But the best I could do is maybe 20 to 30 videos in that playlist, after which the algorithms of YouTube take over. And it's CoComelon every single video. So I decided that this is not right. And I went searching my brain about what my mother was doing back then, because she was a medical doctor, a clinical pathologist. She gave up her career to raise me and my co-founder, who happens to be my brother, my older brother.
Family business. You're older.
Sibling founders, yes. And I remember how different me and my brother were growing up. I think we used the analogy of pets. So I was more like a dog, potentially more like a labradoodle. I love positive reinforcement. I would follow your instructions to the T, and you know, I would try to outperform the standards. So type A student. Very easy to teach for my mom, I have to say. Whereas my brother was a closeted genius who would not read anything except Visual Basic C++ manuals and the rice cooker manual and try to reprogram the rice cooker so that it's not out of tune when the rice is cooked. And it was such a different human being altogether. And it's just two of us, right? So I'd imagine a teacher facing 30, 40 children every day that are all on this beautiful spectrum of humanity. How is it possible that that teacher can have enough quality time, have enough one-on-one time, in order to inspire this child to love to read and then to read to learn, right? We want to instill this love of learning, this holy grail of seeing my students autopilot, finding the book in the library and trying to do the research themselves, right? That's the dream. And we got together. So Clement called me one day, has been in tech for much longer than I have. He was the youngest ever staff software engineer at Google when he was 23 or 24. He won the Founders Award in 2010 for Google. It's the highest award in Google. Then he founded two companies, successfully sold to the previous one for a couple $100 million to VMware, Dell. And he called me one day after VMware, you know, took over his company. And he said, well, you know, in 2020, I know a little bit about something called large language models. And I know that it's going to be a huge deal. It's going to have a seismic shift at a speed and velocity much faster than when Google changed the world of information taxonomy and search, and much faster than how the internet changed the world even. This is going to come in the next 2 to 3 years. And I have an opportunity to either go work in that space as an investor or as an architect or an engineer, or I actually think it could make a huge amount of impact to learning. And so I said, okay. Well, at that time I was in Hong Kong. There's a 21-day quarantine for Clement to fly back to Hong Kong before he can see me and talk to me. And he flew back 5 times that year. So he was quarantined for 105 days. That year. And we got together in person. We were in a room for, you know, in a total of 3 days, right? He spent 105 days in quarantine. And then we had 3 days in a room together. That's all we can afford for hotels. So, okay, we're going to hunker down and let's think about what made a huge difference to us when we were growing up in our education and how we learned to become who we are and how he, in particular, I would say, against all odds, did not get stifled in a standards-based education system where he would probably not get recognized the way he got recognized in Google. And it came back down to what our mother did for us. In those 10 years of what society calls, you know, a full-time mom, which I call a personal learning coach is what she was, she went to the library. This was pre-YouTube, pre-Google, pre-Amazon. Go to the public library, find the Visual Basic C++ books that she absolutely had no idea what they were talking about for my brother. Find the Rodal books and the Enid Blyton books for the cookie cutter daughter. Read it together with the two of us and then ask questions to make sure that we understood what we're reading. Are there any words? Are there any literacy, reasoning, critical thinking aspects that she needs to step in and actually have a conversation with us to make sure that we've learned it and we can actually process the information we're reading. And then slowly independent reading. And then she would move on to find another book that is a little bit more challenging. She also recorded, you know, looked at the TV programming. When is National Geographic going to come on? When is, you know, education TV going to come on? Sesame Street, when does that play in Hong Kong? There's only 30 minutes a day. Let's record that. Let's snip all of the ads out. Let's take the VHL tape back together. And now I have a library of multimedia content that can go in tandem with the learning progress that you've made to reinforce. So we've got this whole multimedia, multimodal, personalized learning companion that is our mother, who, by the way, has to speak 3 languages because in Hong Kong, we are a trilingual society with trilingual schools. So she's doing this in Mandarin, Cantonese, and English. It's to make sure that all 3 languages were taught at the same time. And Nobody was discouraged by comparison. Nobody was discouraged by grades in school, although she was very, very strict about that as well. It was not discouragement. It was, you don't know yet, but you will someday. So that yet is the key word. And we wanted to harness the large language models, the trainable language model, to provide this scaffolded instruction, both in terms of planning the media content, planning the learning content, creating some of the interactive elements, the play-based learning elements, and as well as this oral language model that can translanguage, speak multiple languages at the same time to make a child comfortable if they need more native than English language, but also speak in a highly positive, resilience-building, resilient growth mindset, vocabulary building way for a child whenever they are attempting challenges, so that it's no longer an assessment or an adaptive assessment. It is a real, true learning companion that builds up your social emotional muscle, which is critical in early childhood for learning. Right. So that's what we set out to do, and that's fully inspired by our mother. You know, we kind of say we're trying to upload our mother's consciousness. What we mean by that is society, or perhaps nobody, can afford to have a mother like that. This is a medical doctor, a trained clinical pathologist, studied the early childhood education books herself, led parenting talks herself, then did it with her own kids whom she loves dearly, and is there every day. No one can afford to have that sort of a mother next to them all the time. And we feel strongly that there is some of the heavy lifting that can be done utilizing large language models that are trained to the taxonomy and the research that we were sort of hinting at, that can do the scaffolding, that can do the planning, that can do the choice of content, and then speak in an encouraging way so that every child has a co-viewing, co-learning companion.
That's beautiful. So this has led to the creation of Yeti Confetti Kids. So, and you emphasize the word yet. So does that have to do with the title of Yeti Confetti Kids?
Yes.
And so can you provide an overview of Yeti Confetti Kids and what is the mission? And, you know, who is this for?
Yeti Confetti Kids, the word yet, I don't know yet, is the holy grail. Mm-hmm. We don't expect children, especially in this day and age with ChatGPT and a lot of the fear around cheating and short-circuiting the difficult pathways to learning that is actually essential to knowledge acquisition and retention. Right? What is it that AI could do that doesn't take away that need to try and try again and do the hard work, right? Einstein says the most important thing you need to know when you move to a new city is where's the library. I need to go there and I need to do the research myself. Doing that process itself is learning. So we don't need kids to say, I don't know, but I can ask GPT. We don't want that. That is the last thing that any teacher wants. The sad thing is a lot of times the latest commercialized large language model powered applications tend to have that connotation. Mm-hmm. I'll just go and ask a bot. I'll have a research assistant do the research for me. And oh, they're going to be 90% accurate. It's as good as a human anyway. Let's not fault them for inaccuracies, right? But that's not what a parent or a teacher wants their child to say if they run up to a challenge. The teacher or the parent wants the child to say, I don't know yet, but I believe I can do it someday. That was sort of the mantra that, you know, I think our mother really instilled in us. That's why she got an entrepreneur and a banker and out of her children after they graduated. And I think that the thing is, how do I use the AI models to build different features that would lead a child to believe they can do it, even though they can't right now? Meanwhile, still being standards aligned, pedagogically appropriate, and informed by early childhood research and psychology. So we went about thinking about what my mother did. First thing, the librarian. So we built in what we call Yeti as the AI librarian that is able to understand scope and sequence for a pre-K, a K, first, second, third grade student, standardized. Right, first of all, got to have some sort of taxonomy. And here's what they're going to be learning. Here's what we expect them to know. And here's what we expect them to master at the end of first grade or second grade and whatnot. And this scope is sequenced in the curriculum. So the librarian, AI librarian, could go into any library of songs, audiobooks, nursery rhymes, teacher teaching videos, Sesame Street videos. We love Sesame Workshop's work. Discovery Channel, Nat Geo Kids videos that are all on YouTube for free and embeddable in any app or website. And we say, why don't we have this librarian taxonomize that content? 2 to 5 minute long snapshots. What does this primarily teach? Who is it good for? And is it a learning piece or is it a reinforcement entertainment piece? Right? On that spectrum. And it grades it and it has this librarian is there. We can go and ask for a book or a song or a video anytime. Then we have an AI question master. That's because we want question-based activities rather than assessments. We want to assess a child's learning and where they are at in order to personalize the experience for them. And this assessment needs to be done through play. So the question master has the ability to go into an art asset library that our designers created. There are objects, backdrops, characters, etc., that can be assembled through 200 blueprints that align to curriculum, assembled into visual aids, assembled into visual challenges and questions, so that a child who cannot read or write yet has a chance to apply their knowledge. And that's very important in the early ages in preschool. This question master also asks the question orally and can ask that question in 6 languages. In addition to English, we chose the top 6 languages that are spoken by English language learners in US schools at the moment. So that's mainly Spanish, Mandarin, Vietnamese, Filipino, Portuguese, Arabic. And we chose these languages in order to reinforce and to help when a child is a newcomer, is an ELL student, and they get very lost, not because they don't have the ability to apply the knowledge that they have. Simply they didn't understand the question, or they need a little bit more help before they're able to understand that question. So that's really important for the AI question master, also modeled after our mother. Then finally, very importantly, there is an AI learning companion. This is the 14, 15-year-old persona that is Yeti Confetti. Yeti Confetti celebrates trying again. Yeti Confetti celebrates learning outcome change rather than achievement. It doesn't look at whether a child hits the standard. It looks at where the child's starting point was. Where did we assess their ability was through play to begin with? And every 10 minutes, where are we getting them to? Did they achieve something more? Did they learn more? Did they go deeper or did they go wider in their knowledge base? And Yeti Confetti is there to give hints to a child, is a co-learning companion that is alongside the child rather than an all-knowing judge. They ask the question. They say, hey, remember we watched that video and that song and we were counting apples? And you remember, was it right to left or left to right? How did we count those apples? Now we're counting pencils. It's the same thing. It's just a different thing that you're counting. Try again, right? So those are the things that our mother did that any good tutor would do where you don't write off a student, where you make sure the student gains the confidence of, hey, I know this. I have something in my toolkit where I can apply to this new challenge that I'm facing now. And all of that oral instructional model is trained so that it builds on top of this child's positive self-talk ability. And we hear from our users calling us and saying, I hear my child repeating what Yeti said to them and congratulating themselves, even when they couldn't do it. So Yeti would say, that's not quite right, but way to go for trying again. And, you know, Aiden would say, way to go, Aiden. And so this parent is hearing their child repeating these words. It helps the parent also learn how to, it's like a role model for the parent, for the teacher, for the tutor, for the nanny, for the grandparent. Hey, here's how Yeti's getting the child excited to learn. I'm going to start following that mode and see what happens, right? So that's how Yeti comes together, and the mission is to create this equitable access to high-quality early childhood education using AI to empower the whole village. and to bridge the key learning gaps in human beings that are 3 to 9 year olds. And a majority of it is their emotional management ability, their language ability, and then their resilience in how to learn through failure, right? That's more important than any mathematical test or reading test at the age of 5, because that sets you up to love learning, to read, to learn on your own in the future. So that's what we're for. And the audience is really, you know, at the beginning stage, at the preschool stage, all the way to third grade, where school readiness and third grade reading proficiency is the biggest indicators of academic success overall in a human's lifespan. So that's where we're focusing.
And what a great positive reinforcement model. And I love how you mentioned that this is not only a learning opportunity for the child, but a learning opportunity for the parent, the guardian, the teacher, whoever is implementing this, how you can better communicate with your students and give them the positive reinforcement that they need to get them to that next level of learning.
Correct. It's not individualized support, right? We know that in that scenario, you're cutting out 80% of the village that spends the most time with the child. That is also some of the pitfalls of a lot of the gamified apps out there, all the edtech apps out there that try to get the child to stay on for as long as possible, just getting them to do 100 assessments in one summer. That's what we hang our hats on. That's our value proposition. We don't believe that. We believe that that is important. Get the child to do the repetition. The practice is important. But even more important is A, that they love learning, they're resilient, they're going to try harder things. And secondly, that the parent or the teacher that is using this in the classroom or in the living room hears how Yeti explains the problems, adds on to Yeti's explanation, right? A lot of times we see teachers telling us, Yeti's my co-pilot. Yeti's prepared some materials. Yeti's prepared some question-based activities. I'm alongside each child. I'm sitting next to them. I'm hearing how Yeti's explaining it to the child, and I reinforce, and then Yeti reinforces back. And we built this feature where the teacher gets to chat with Yeti now. So the teacher can actually use natural language, like they're texting a friend, and text Yeti anytime and say, hey, Yeti, I spent 30 minutes with this child or this class today. They are having a really good time talking about dinosaurs. Try to use this interest in dinosaurs and work on counting with them. And Yeti would say, on it. Got that. And that marries up the human intelligence with the artificial intelligence into actionable intelligence. And then Yeti cues dinosaur-related counting songs. That was the magic moment, right? Like, that was the time that we saw the teachers light up.
Wow.
And they were like, whoa, this is so great. I told you a little bit that I know that has to do with personality or interests about these children that only I know. You wouldn't know, Yeti. You don't talk to the children, not have conversations with the children. Yeti, you have individual assessment results and learning progress about each child that I may not have. Let's marry that up and let's work together to create this learning experience for the child that is highly engaging, that is effective, and is exciting. And that in itself, I think, is really how AI has the potential to enhance learning outcomes. AI is not going to be any different from any previous technology in enhancing learning outcomes if it is an individualized support or a productivity tool. If it's a siloed tool and it takes away instructional time from the teacher or it replaces homework, that is not what we're about. It really enhances learning outcome when it has the ability to role model. It has the ability to do some of the heavy lifting work for the teacher, and it has the interactive ability with the teacher or the parent so that it works together as a team and then effect that exciting learning journey for each child. And that ability for the teacher to just chat with Yeti and text Yeti and say, almost like a teaching assistant or intern or an educator rising that's doing practicum hours in your classroom and helping you out, that high school student, you just talk to them and say, hey, I know they like dinosaurs. Why don't you prepare a lesson that has dinosaurs in it? And it's doing that in the background while the teacher continues their instruction time. That's why, you know, that's how we see AI's potential to enhance learning outcomes. It's the marriage of human intelligence and artificial intelligence, so that it becomes actionable intelligence.
Intersection of technology and pedagogy. That's amazing. I'd like to talk a little bit about the research that went behind Yeti Confetti Kids. So, I mean, how does this align with current understanding of child development and learning theories? And, you know, who are the experts that you're working with? I had mentioned in your introduction, you had worked with Harvard and UN advisors. So, yeah, what went into this research process?
Yeah, it was day one. I would even say it's pre-day one. Both me and my co-founder have been supporting foster homes that teach English to Dalit women in India for a very long time. We've also been supporting NGOs that set up makeshift classrooms in refugee camps across Middle East, specifically Lebanon, where they serve Syrian refugee children that have been displaced by war for over 10 years. We ourselves have been made to tutor about 50 children as young adults because our mother took them into our household. And these are single parent household children and new immigrant children when we were still living in Hong Kong. We've been doing this all our lives, and we knew that going to the experts in the field that have been working in the most resource-strapped locations is going to teach us something. We don't necessarily need to learn how Kumon did it in the Bay Area or how Russian School of Math did it in LA. We need to learn how that volunteer refugee teacher taught a class of 60 refugee children and got them ready for school and assimilate into their host country's public school system. We need to talk to that person. So the first one that we reached out to is a longtime friend and also a postdoc PhD in PTSD child psychology and post-trauma children learning and education, and that is Dr. Alexandra Chen from Harvard, who was a UN advisor, a World Economic Forum speaker on the plight of refugee children education for the longest time. She's been doing this since she speaks 10 languages herself. And we went and asked her if we could talk to their head of refugee education and three lead teachers on the ground in Lebanon that's teaching these refugee children. They are teaching English, Arabic, and mathematics and trying against all odds to bridge the gap. And they have a history. This NGO called Jazur, where Dr. Alexandra Chen is a board, a director of. Jazur has been schooling 14,000 Syrian refugee children in the past decade. And they were part of the World Bank EdTech Hub because they first pioneered using WhatsApp to link up overseas teachers who do this pro bono, that are sending worksheets on WhatsApp to the refugee children's parents on their mobile phones. And then the children were marking up using WhatsApp's, you know, lasso and the pencil tool onto that worksheet on the phone, sending it back to these volunteer teachers abroad who are grading them and teaching these kids. So it was a really good partner, highly innovative NGO, on the ground experience on how to teach. We wanted to talk to them because if we think about what is most important, and that is beyond English and math, social emotional learning, which is a third of our content on Yeti Confetti Kids. We want to know how these teachers designed their curriculum, orally instructed these children that are suffering from PTSD to get them excited to learn through failure and to try again in this environment where they do not get rewarded for taking risks. They do not get rewarded for speaking up, and they don't have a hope for the future, even. They don't know why they're learning. So how do you get that child in that mindset to want to learn? And they've designed the five pillars of our social-emotional learning curriculum with us that is aligned to the CASEL framework, which is the most celebrated, most endorsed, and applied framework for social-emotional learning here in the United States as well as abroad. But we adapted it a little bit so that it suits the practical needs in the classroom and how those needs can be met by the AI librarian, choosing the right content, by the AI question master, asking the questions so that the student has a chance to try and try again and again. And the AI learning companion speaking the language like Dr. Alexandra Chen does to her cohorts. And so she was the first person to come in and inspire us from the social emotional learning curriculum all the way to how Yeti talks and teaches English and math. Very important person that we've worked with since January of 2023. Her teachers have been phenomenal on site in Lebanon, adopting our alpha product, giving us feedback, what didn't work, letting us know about bandwidth issues, offline mode requirements, language requirements that informed us on our product roadmap from day one. The second most important person that we were working with, and I would say there's a couple of them, are the curriculum experts. From the English side of the house, we were talking to the Advanced Education Research Development Fund's Senior Director of Reading Reimagined, and that's Claire Galdoon. She is an ex-assistant principal. She is an expert in reading, phonetically, science of reading, and how to build foundational language arts and literacy in reading for children. And so she came in, and she was sort of our first rep team member, stress testing Yeti, seeing if Yeti's asking the question right, getting the questions wrong as if she was a four-year-old, and listening to how Yeti explained it, and correcting how those explanations should be made. She also understands the scope and sequence very, very well. And she's informed us that instead of just scoping and sequencing, we also need to know how to parachute. When a child is stuck in this question, what does that tell us? As a teacher, the teacher decides in that moment whether or not to parachute this child out of this particular challenge and where to go back to reinforce. So she's informed us on sort of the 250 parachute moments in the 3 to 9 year olds English literacy curriculum, and the most likely parachute off point. If they're stuck here, where would I parachute? If I went here, they're still stuck, where would I parachute? It's grounded in phonemic awareness, building on top of phonics knowledge, alphabet knowledge, marrying up with the Scarborough rope of reading, getting children to love reading and just reading out loud, audio books and picture books being played at the right literacy level and lexile level to the child, forming both of those strands of literacy and love for reading together. And that research really, truly transformed the effectiveness of our literacy module to the point where we had in our Thai school, one of our pilot schools, used our literacy module, did a baseline test of English language development scores before and after a 6-month bridging program for their incoming class of fourth graders that are reading like first graders. And in 6 months' time, the same standardized ELD test, the WIDA test, was administered, and the children saw a 1.28 grade level uplift in English language development scores. Yes, and all of that is credit to the expert knowledge in scoping, sequencing, parachuting that has been training Yeti in the back. And this red team of experts have been stress testing it. And we're doing that also with our math side of the curriculum. And then with our critical thinking curriculum, which we have designed and co-developed with Stanford's research director in critical thinking. All of that is to say, the large language model's beauty is that it is all patient. It can study a lot of materials in a blink of an eye. But what data sets to train it on, what research to show it, what guardrails to build for it, what blueprints and samples of knowledge do we show to it in order for it to catch on and pick up and improve over time, is really important. So that's where our research partners and our experts come in. And they have been phenomenal in doing this with us for the past 18 months. And we see the improvements coming out in learning outcome change of users.
That's amazing. When I think about AI and the work that you're doing for this specific project, I really picture the most complex choose your own adventure novel that you can probably imagine, just because there's so many, as you mentioned, parachuting to the different areas.
Infinite, yes.
Yeah, so many different ones. So I can imagine that might have been a challenge in the process as you're, you know, working with different researchers, serving different populations, thinking about all of these different places that you can go. So what are some of the specific challenges that you encountered when merging AI with the complexities of education?
Yeah, that is a wonderful question. I always recall two things that teachers have said to me. One is a teacher from Nairobi, Africa, and another teacher was from Lebanon. And the teacher from Africa said, the first thing after trying out Yeti Confetti, he said, you can't say A for apples here in Africa. It's A for animals. We don't have apples much. What's an apple? It's something that children learn maybe later on in life. But when talking to a 3 or 4 year old and you're trying to teach them the alphabet, you don't say A for apple. That's even harder than saying A. So that was the first thing that we realized was cultural context and modifying the content to fit the learner in question is very important. Now, the beauty of this is a challenge for all educational programs. We try to run a, if you try to play Sesame Workshop's US content in Africa, it's not going to work.
Right.
That's why Sesame Workshop is so brilliant and developed content locally in context. They even have Muppets for each country. It's really important to understand the context. The beauty of large language models is that the human intelligence can marry up with the artificial intelligence. We can only do so much to train this artificial intelligence on universal pedagogies, on standardized curriculum, on the science of reading, on Lexile levels and reading requirements, on computational thinking and critical thinking frameworks. But it falls short when it gets into the local context. The human teacher comes in and says, hey, Yeti, I am looking at a group of students that do not know what apples are. Do not use apples in this particular lesson when you're teaching the alphabet or short A sounds or spelling, or you're teaching word categories and you're teaching fruits. The Lebanon teacher told us, don't use strawberries. They don't know what strawberries are. Use blueberries. Just change that one word and it will click. Well, who knew, right? We wouldn't know. And I don't think GPT-4.0 knows either. So that human intelligence, absolutely key. And to make that human intelligence seamlessly integrate is a no lift for the teacher to tell the model, just steer clear of this. Make sure you speak in Arabic 50% of the time here. For this student, 80% of the time Mandarin. That student, 20% of the time Spanish. And by the way, we want them to be 100% only English by the end of this term. All of that for a large language model, easy to understand and is able to implement immediately. So one of those big challenges is to get the teacher and the human being comfortable enough to do that. It's strange, right? We have these teachers that get on to calls with our product team, and my product team is on these one-on-one 60-minute video chats with teachers across the United States who are highly opinionated about AI in the classroom. And they see this and it takes a while to get the hang of it, right? What do I say? Should I say my kids like soccer? What if you oversteer and just talk about soccer all day long? I don't want that. As a human being, I know when to re-steer, when to say that's enough, when to say you've got a lot of fun. Now I'm going to do something hard with you. You might not like it, but I'm going to do it. Right? All of that constant steering, that's something that human beings do all the time. How do I get these teachers to get comfortable enough with Yeti to talk to it? And how can Yeti discern what different teachers say? They might mean the same thing, they just say it differently. Can I send you a confirmation about, is this what you mean from what you said? And out of our standards in the curriculum, did you mean that this child has a Lexile level about 300 and 500? That's what I'm hearing, but I just want to make sure, right? You're telling me that they're reading Pete the Cat on their own, but they're not so much there with boxcar children yet. Are you sure that that's what you mean? That's what I decipher from what you're saying. Please confirm. And so all of those things are sort of the challenges when you merge AI with education and you're trying to say, well, this is safe. It reinforces the I don't know yet mentality already. It's not going to short circuit the learning pathway. But still, can we include the village? Can the village include this Yeti as part of the village? it takes time. There's a behavioral change. We're seeing a lot of amazing folks, like we're working with organizations that train rising teachers. These are high school and undergrad college students that have declared that they want a career in education. They loved to learn how AI can be used in teaching. And so they tend to be the early adopters. They tend to want to try it out. We also hear from teachers that are veterans in the field saying that I'm taking courses to learn this. I am doing the PD to learn how to use technology and AI in my classroom better. And I have an opinion that I want to share that these young folks may not have, because I have 30 years. And we loved talking to these teachers, and they're telling us a lot of different things. And you know, right now, the challenge that we face is behavioral change, adoption, and then solving the death by a thousand cuts that could happen when it gets implemented in the classroom. We're still learning so much from the teachers. We're still learning so much from the refugee volunteers that are teaching in Lebanon every single day. I don't foresee at any point in time there will be no challenge in merging AI with education. AI is changing every single day. What it can do is changing every single day. On the infrastructure side, the sky's the limit. But on the education side, you really need to know what is the pain point you're trying to solve for this teacher. What are they tired of doing? And don't throw a scalpel at a GP expecting them to then perform kidney transplant. This is a GP. GPs are just as important. Don't throw them some tool that NASA invented and then expect them to do something brand new. The tool is not the key. The person administering the tool.
You're talking a lot about teachers, especially the next generation of teachers that are interested in using this and testing it out. So I know we only have a few minutes left, so I want to get to kind of the last few questions here. So in looking forward at the future of Yeti Confetti Kids, you know, how is this going to contribute to the broader conversation about early childhood education and literacy development? What's coming up next in the pipeline for you?
Yeah, I think policy is very important. So being in the conversation and the dialogue of safety, effective use, learning outcome change being the number one indicator of success, not the cool factor nor the productivity uplift, right? Learning outcome change. It, being in those policy conversations would be very important for anyone that is in this space, in this ed tech with AI space. A lot of the unknowns right now are, would this diminish the intent to learn by the students? And also make teachers short circuit certain things that they normally would do in order to prep lessons or to teach effectively. I would say, number one, we have to have these pilots in classrooms with teachers and with tutors. It could be in after school settings. It could be in child development centers. It could be in IEP intervention programs, where there is a need to expand the programs, universal pre-K programs, etc. The instructors, particularly bilingual and ELL-specific teachers, are scarce. We're talking about 2 to 4% of the teacher population in early childhood being bilingual and proficient or ELL-specific. But we're talking about 30 to 40% of our students, particularly lower SES students, that are ELL students. We need to get in touch with these teachers. We need to make sure that the technology really helps them expand their capacity, expand their ability to understand the teachers, and get the parents' engagement to come up and to improve as well. We cannot take the parents out of the picture. So getting into the policy conversations, making sure that there are guardrails put in place. That policy conversation I've had in my past life over a decade long in the financial governance, in the financial inclusion, microfinance space, how to do credit scoring well when I was a banker and I was working in financial services before. This private public partnership in forming this policy when new technology is available that has the potential to close gaps, that has potential to get access more equitable, that needs to happen between the private and the public sector. So joining those conversations, that's what we're doing. Talking to the teachers, making sure that this use case, particularly for lower SES and ELL students and their teachers and parents. It's been effective in improving the relationship of teacher, parent, and child. It enhances the teacher's understanding of the student, and it's not taking away precious instructional time one-on-one between teacher and student. Very, very key. And in terms of future contributions, we are broadening our impact. We just got the great news that we are chosen as a finalist in the MIT Solve Global Learning Challenge for 2024. It's a huge deal. I am so excited and also in awe of all the other finalists that were chosen alongside us. Technically, I couldn't believe it myself. We were chosen for our work with the refugee children, the solution Yeti Confetti for Refugees alongside Jazor. But that gifts lends us both the grant in order to expand the program beyond the three Lebanon sites into a much broader cohort of refugees. But it also lends us intellectual and network capital through MIT Solve to connect with other child development centers that might be NGO funded, charity funded. It also lends us the design thinking and tech enablement field experience that folks like MIT Solve, that folks like the Spencer Grant, that folks like Robinhood, for example, in New York, they all have tech enablement field experience, right? Getting solutions into the hands of those that need it. We really want to work with more folks like that to advocate for the integration of AI in education to support teachers.
Beautiful. And congratulations on that recognition from MIT, by the way. That's a great opportunity for Lervana Labs and for Yeti Confetti Kids. So we're running short on time. So I have one last question for you. As a lifelong learner, what is a recommendation that you would give to our listeners, a book, a film, a podcast, anything that you would like to continue their education?
Apart from your podcast, Keith?
Yes, of course.
So I personally, this might be a little bit out of left field. I love We Can Do Hard Things by Glennon Doyle. We Can Do Hard Things was started by Glennon when I believe when she was at sort of the pit in her life, she was crying on the floor of her bathroom, not knowing what to do with her toddler children and is struggling. I resonate with that so much every day as a founder who has moved across the Pacific Ocean with three children under the age of eight with a trailing husband and spouse. I think learning is a lifelong endeavor. And it is a social emotional workout. And We Can Do Hard Things talks a lot about how to build that social emotional muscle. And I love that podcast.
Thank you so much for that recommendation, Christy. Christy Pang is the co-founder of Lervana Labs and the creator of Yeti Confetti Kids. You can find out more information about Yeti Confetti Kids at yeticonfettikids.com. I will also put links to all of the resources that we talked about today on our landing page, which is learningmate.com/podcast. Christy, once again, thank you so much for joining the Learning Mate podcast.
Thank you.
Once again, visit yeticonfettikids.com for more information on Lervana Labs and Yeti Confetti Kids, how it works, the latest news, plus teachers can claim a free account. You can also start your child's personalized learning journey by searching for Yeti Confetti Kids in the App Store. Also, don't forget to visit learningmate.com/podcast. We have links posted to additional resources like our guest Christy Pang's LinkedIn profile and the latest news about Lervana Labs. Plus, you can find our entire library of episodes of discussions with education thought leaders. And if you would like to be a guest on the Learning Mate podcast, fill out our questionnaire on what topic you'd like to explore, and we will see you very soon in the guest room. The Learning Mate podcast is a production of Learning Mate Solutions Incorporated. I'm your host, Keith Chandler, and until next time, thank you for listening.